Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In the video that you're about to see, I will be discussing a meeting that took place where I was present, and it was a meeting of Boers. And I thought I'd just very quickly show you a little bit about the Boers in their history so that you know who I'm talking about and what their history is and what it is that's important. So let's go take a look. The first whites who came and settled in South Africa here in the Cape were known as the Dutch. And initially the Dutch were the people who even owned the Cape. But due to wars in Europe, the ownership of the Cape actually changed hands from the Dutch to the British and so on. But the people who'd come here, they remained here. And later on, these people became known as the Afrikaners and the Boers. But it's the Boers that we are going to be focusing on. The Afrikaners and the Boers have got basically the same genetic lineage, let's say, and they've intermarried and so on. But the Boers are the specific whites who went out of the Cape, broke away from British rule, and did their own thing. And they are very important people that we want to have a look at here. So this map shows South Africa a long time later. And here you can see the Cape Colony. The Cape Colony was British. And the remaining Dutch who lived here were known as the Cape Dutch. And nowadays people refer to them as the Afrikaners. But the people that we're interested in here are the people who broke out of the Cape Colony. And they set up these two republics, the Transvaal Republic here and the Orange Free State here. These were their own countries. These countries were independent. And these are probably the only independent countries created by whites in Africa south of the Sahara that have ever been created. These countries were created by whites who did not have any allegiance to Britain or any other European country. So these countries are very special. They are totally independent. And the whites who created them are whites who'd lived in South Africa for centuries and who broke away from the British. So the two countries are the Transvaal and the Orange Free State. The Boers, when they dashed out of the Cape Colony, they also tried to create other republics. So you can see that for a while there was even a republic called the Republic of Natalia. In total, they created six different republics. But the ones that survived the test of time were these two, the Transvaal and the Orange Free State. Now The British hounded the Boers and came after the Boers, despite the fact that the Boers had left their colonies. And the Boers and the British fought two wars against each other. The Boers won the first Boer War, but it was the second Boer War that was the really nasty one. The second Boer War, in a nutshell, was almost like the Allied invasion of Europe in order to crush Germany. It was a similar thing that happened in South Africa. And despite all the wars and struggles with blacks that have taken place in South Africa, the Second Anglo-Boer War, and this photo that you see here are Boers from that time in that war, the Second Anglo-Boer War remains the greatest conflict that ever took place on South African soil. Okay, I want to repeat that. The greatest war ever fought in South Africa was fought between the British Empire and the Boers. And basically, the British Empire came to steal the territory of the Boers, and you'll find out why shortly. So this is another photo of the Boers from that time. This happened at the turn of the century. This was from 1899 to just after 1900. The British found the Boers to be so tough that they had to bring people from all across their empire in order to come to South Africa to take over South Africa. And the Boers put up a hell of a fight in South Africa for their small numbers. It was the same sort of desperate struggle that the Germans engaged in on German territory. And the Boers were so elusive, once the Boers lost the main battles, the Boers turned to guerrilla warfare. But the Boers operated on horseback. And the Boers were so excellent at this that the British found it impossible to control South Africa. So what they did was they carved South Africa up and they put up fences and they built these things that you see here. This is known as a blockhouse. This is the cheapest kind of fort that the British could build. And the British built these things by the thousands across the length and breadth of South Africa in an attempt to control the Boers and to stop the Boers. And eventually it succeeded. But the British had to bring in 500,000 troops to take on a tiny army of Boers who refused to surrender to them. The Rothschilds are the richest Jews in the world, but you won't see them on any of the news reports of who are the richest. You won't see any mention of them at all. And I'm convinced it is because they've hidden their wealth. They've moved their wealth away into all kinds of private things that nobody reports on. So it's very possible that they are the world's greatest trillionaires because they've been making enormous amounts of money for hundreds of years. This quote that you see here, this is from Mayer Amschel Rothschild. He was one of the greatest of the original Rothschilds. And this is a quote from him. And he said, "Our goal is to win ultimate control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world." Our goal is to win ultimate control of the wealth, natural resources, and manpower of the entire world. So that'll give you a bit of an insight into how these Jews think and how incredibly ambitious they are. And their ambition is to steal that which belongs to you. So it should come as no surprise that when the Boers got the largest amount of gold and diamonds in the world, the Jews would come hunting for control of that. So you might wonder, why did the British Empire come to invade the Transvaal and the Free State? Well, it turns out that these Boers were minding their own business, and while they were living in their own states, somebody came and discovered gold. They then discovered gold, they then discovered diamonds. But back then, they discovered so much gold that I think South Africa had something like 3/4 of the world's gold here in these Boer republics. It was an unbelievable sum. And the greedy, Jewish-driven British came to seize their countries. But of course, they didn't say openly that they're coming for the gold. They simply invented all kinds of junk reasons as to why they needed to attack the Boers. They came up with all kinds of rubbish, which I'm not going to go into, but it was all junk. And they also had people like Cecil John Rhodes, who was a Freemason, who was working for the Rothschilds. All these people were involved in basically setting up the Boers until such a time as the British could claim in a fake manner, yes, yes, you know, we really need to fight these farmers and crush them. You know, they're a sort of a threat to world peace kind of rubbish. Same sort of nonsense as what they did with the Germans, etc. But anyway, the real reason was the gold and diamonds, because there was so much of it. And so what you have here is a quote, and the quote is from a guy called Henry Hamilton Beamish. Beamish was actually a Rhodesian who was very Jew-wise about a century ago. And Beamish, this is what Beamish actually had to say about the Boer War. And he said this 37 years after the Boer War. So this is what Beamish said. The Boer War occurred 37 years ago. Boer means farmer. Many criticized a great power like Britain for trying to wipe out the Boers. Upon inquiry, I found that all the gold and diamond mines of South Africa were owned by Jews, that Rothschild controlled gold, Samuels controlled silver, Baum controlled other mining, and Moses controlled base metals. Anything these people touch, they inevitably pollute. But the key thing here is that Beamish did some investigation, and Beamish discovered that everything that was of importance in the mineral field was controlled by Jews from Britain, among them the Rothschilds, but there were others as well. There were even German Jews here as well. And during this war when the British were invading these Boer republics and were burning down the farms of the Boers, shooting their animals by the millions, etc., the Rothschilds, the Jewish Rothschilds in Britain, sent this Christmas card, postcard with gifts to every single one of the British Empire troops. And it says here, with compliments of the season from Lord Rothschild, Alfred de Rothschild, and Leopold de Rothschild. So these are the richest Jews in Britain, and they sent this card along with gifts to every single one of the 500,000 troops in South Africa, thanking them for their good work that they were doing here, destroying the Boers, and of course seizing their wealth. So that's just to give you some background. So that's how the Boers lost their republics, and that's how the Jews came and the British came and took control of the wealth of South Africa. In the audio that you're about to hear, you're going to hear a recording that I made regarding a meeting that I attended and events that happened at the meeting, as well as my viewpoints. The people who attended the meeting listened to my audio, and they pointed out that I'd made two errors. And so I just want to point out these errors so that you're aware of them. And the one error I will refer to again after the end. The most important error is that in my commentary, I talk about how there are atheists. I speak about the fact that there is no Christianity, that they aren't praying, etc., etc. The people then corrected me and they made the following point. that at this meeting there were Christians as well as atheists among the Boers. So there were both sides. So that is why there were no prayers, etc. But it is also a very good thing, because I want to emphasize that in the past, these people were only Christians and they tolerated nothing except Christianity. But the fact that there are now Christians and notion of a change in mindset, and also that they are tolerating each other's differences of opinion regarding religion. So in the rest of the commentary, you'll hear me talking as if everybody is an atheist, but that's not true. There are Christians there, but everybody's agreed that they are going to keep religion out of this. So that's a very good thing. Unity and survival is more important than religion, and they are willing to tolerate differences among each other. Let me tell you, these are big steps forward. In late April 2021, I was invited to a meeting of Boers, and the idea was to discuss ideas for the future. The meeting was over 2 days, but I only attended the first day. So the following is based on notes that I made and thoughts that I had based on that first day. There were some people who had been involved in similar meetings before. There was a group known as the Boerer Republicans, and it had been run by a guy who passed away. His name is Pieter Rudolph. I had met him once at his house a couple of years ago and spoken to him. So there were one or two people at the meeting who had worked with Pieter Rudolph. So these notes of mine are more or less in chronological order, and they contain observations of things that were said at the meeting, etc. So it's not a comprehensive record, but it will give you some idea of some of the things that were said. In this commentary, I will also just add in my own observations in between things, so it contains thoughts and observations as well. One of the things that surprised me about this meeting was that I am well aware of the Afrikaans speakers and the Boers of South Africa and their very close relationship to the church. I was therefore quite surprised by a number of things at this meeting that were unlike anything I'd seen before. For example, I was very surprised that nobody even considered talking about having a prayer or anything like that before doing anything. These people are thinking very differently, and that is the big thing that stood out from this meeting, is that this is the first time that I've seen Boers and they are thinking and talking in ways that I could never expect. I must tell you, I never expected these people to behave like this. I've lived in South Africa for 40 years now, and I can tell you these people are changing. My view of the changing of whites, and especially now the Afrikaans speakers, I'm telling you, things are happening. And just as a general comment in addition to that, if you'd ever told me that in South Africa that I would meet people who are Afrikaans and they're atheists, I would have told you that's not possible. That's maybe 1 in 100,000 or 1 in 1,000,000, and he's completely weird. But I know people who are solid, sane professionals who have completely dumped Christianity. I'm not joking with you. I had never expected in my life to see so many changes in the minds of these Afrikaans-speaking whites. And the good side of this, the great side of this, is that it means that their minds are open and their minds are seeking new answers and approaching problems from different angles. And that is something that I very much welcome. And in this meeting, there was a lot of this kind of discussion. People were saying things that I never thought I'd hear in Afrikaans company. So among the things that came out right early on was one of the older men was talking about the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds being the richest Jewish family in Britain and most probably the richest Jewish family on the planet, but with wealth that is totally and utterly hidden, because you'll never see Rothschild on the list of the richest people in the world. You'll never see that, never. Yet history shows that these people had huge amounts of money. And I even knew someone in Britain who had some kind of connection with wealthy people, and we discussed the wealth of the Rothschilds. And that friend of mine, who was ex-South African, he came back to me and said that the Rothschilds are worth at least $1 trillion. And I think that that is a very valid point. In reality, they may be worth many trillions, but it's hidden away because it's not in public companies. Now, the Rothschilds play a big role in the British invasion of South Africa and the destruction of the Boer Republics. So at this meeting, one of the older men there, he pointed out that Rothschild had said that the only man that he trusts in the world is General Jan Smuts. Now, who is General Jan Smuts? Jan Smuts is a Afrikaner, what you could call the Cape Dutch, who fought in the Anglo-Boer War. But Jan Smuts became a total liberal, and he did anything he could for Britain. And he did many, many things. He was a true white globalist, long before Nelson Mandela, long before F.W. de Klerk. Jan Smuts was a globalist, a white globalist, and a liberal in South Africa. And he would do anything for Jews. He would do anything for Britain. He would go and kill anybody that needed to be killed as long as it made the British happy. For example, he ran the campaign in East Africa in World War I. But the quote was that Rothschild said that the only man that he trusted was Jan Smuts. And Jan Smuts is no friend of whites. That's all I can say. And Jan Smuts is no friend of the whites of South Africa, especially not the Boers. Just in the general discussion, as I was listening, I could see that these people have rejected the multiculturalism of South Africa. They have no interest in that whatsoever, which I share. I share that view totally. There was a discussion about the laws of nature, and that the laws of nature are eternal, and that if you go against nature, you are basically rejecting your own life. Again, things that I totally agree with. And also that you have the full right to defend your own life. In the discussion, it was obvious that quite a number of the people there were Jew-wise. They knew about Jews, and they knew about the nonsense that Jews get up to. One particularly interesting man, who I won't mention what his career is, but he's a very, very bright guy. He spoke about how he worked for a particular very large Jewish company in South Africa. And he was doing very, very well. And he explained that back in 1975, the head of this Jewish company actually took him aside and he made him basically an offer he couldn't refuse. And this is very interesting because things like this must be happening all across the world and in the Western world and in America, but these things are never spoken about. And I found his story very interesting. He said that basically the owner of this company gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. It was an offer literally for everything, for more money, for shares in companies, etc., as well as women. He could get anything he wanted, anything, whether it's money, positions, women, he could have it all. But there were conditions attached. And after he thought about it for a day, this head of this Jewish company, this enormous, powerful Jewish company, asked him, "What is your answer?" And he rejected it. And he explained why he rejected it. And that guy was so astounded because nobody ever rejects offers like this. And this also meant that now he's in trouble. These people don't like this kind of response. Various other things and discussions that were mentioned that also struck me as showing a different mindset was there were mentions and talking about Aryans, Odin, the god Odin, the pagan god Odin, Hitler, etc. Another thing that I picked up on is that the Boers are not a hateful people. I've never known them to be, and they aren't. But they do have an intense dislike of English, and that is because of what the English did to them in the Second Anglo-Boer War, when they invaded the Boer republics and destroyed their nations, killed their women and children, smashed up their farms, destroyed their animals, etc. In that book by Dr. Alan Bird that I quoted from when I was doing the video about the death of Verwoerd, Dr. Alan Bird, who himself is British, actually also mentioned that. He mentioned that his family came and lived in the Boer republics and that they were well received and well treated, and that it was only once the British had invaded the Boer republics and done the nasty, nasty things to the Boers that they did, that for the first time ever that the Boers actually hated the British. So it's a rerun of Germany, basically. It's a rerun of Germany, invaded by crazed whites from outside who are busy doing the task of the Jews. And another point as well that wasn't mentioned here, but it is valid, is that the Rothschilds gave presents to British soldiers who were in South Africa busy killing Boers. And they sent a Christmas card with presents, and it was signed by the Rothschilds, by Lord Rothschild, thanking them for the good work they're doing in South Africa. That good work being the destruction of the Boers, the killing of their people, the burning down of their farms, etc. The invasion and destruction of their own country. Or should I say their own countries, since there were two of them. The Free State and the South African Republic. So the core of the discussion was about the Boer nation and getting the Boer nation to arise again. In terms of their mannerisms and the way the meeting was conducted, it is typical of whites everywhere, where everybody sits politely and they let each person talk until they've finished talking, very much like the Americans. Very much similar kind of atmosphere. There was a video that I'd passed around sometime beforehand about Dr. William Pierce's analysis of South Africa. And Dr. William Pierce is a Nazi of modern times, of internet times, who was the top national socialist in America. And he did an analysis of what went wrong in South Africa. And the people at the meeting referred to that, and they actually liked it a lot. they actually agreed with everything Dr. William Pierce said about what had gone wrong in South Africa. Other things that came up in the meeting was, it is clear that all the participants reject globalism and the New World Order. They don't want any part of that. And what they really seek for the Boers is personal freedom. At a point in the discussion, the topic came up about teaching the youth, and I gave my own input, and I got quite carried away there, and I spoke at length about the Hitler Youth and the teaching of the youth in particular, but whites in general. There was also a mention of the Broederbond, the Afrikaner Broederbond. This is the organization that later came and operated in total secrecy and took control of South Africa and created apartheid. And there were various negative views about that, including saying that they were too loyal to the British. Topics from the past that came up were things like Cecil John Rhodes, and there's a guy who's quite famous in Rhodesia, and his name is Charles Rudd. So there was mention of Rhodes, Rudd, the Boer War, and also lots of talk about Afrikaner traitors, especially Jan Smuts, and Jan Smuts's association with Lord Milner and Rothschild. So Jan Smuts is a very negative character from the Boer point of view, and I totally agree. Interestingly enough, when the topic of Christian pastors came up, I can tell you there were no kind words for the Christian pastors. And again, this is a sign of the massive change in South Africa amongst the Afrikaans speakers. The church used to be critical to them, and these pastors used to have a very high position in society. And I know from other people that I've dealt with that churches in South Africa that used to be filled with whites, filled with Afrikaans-speaking whites, those churches are literally empty on Saturdays. All across South Africa, there are empty churches everywhere. And that is from the feeling of betrayal of these whites by the church, by their own pastors. So there are no kind words for those people. And that's actually quite an amazing thing. That's amazing. That's a massive, massive change in the culture of South Africa. There were all kinds of discussions by different people, and I'm not going to go into some of the detail. There was even historical stuff, ancient historical stuff that was mentioned that I personally am not interested in. But what I will say is that, again, it shows that there's a mindset that's completely different. They are willing to embrace or consider or discuss things that you would never ever have heard come out of the mouths of these people 20 years ago. Never. The goal of the 2 days was also to try and create some kind of organization and give it some kind of direction, sort of a mission and a vision, and every speaker came and gave their input. But the key element was freedom for the Boers and defining the Boer nation. And among the questions are, how do we obtain freedom for the Boer nation? Among the points made was that whites are fighting a lot among each other. We are disagreeing with each other, and the reason is because we actually don't know each other. We've not been interacting with each other and talking frankly with each other. And that is something that I totally agree with. And I'll even mention again that not only is there a distaste for the way that Christianity has left them, but there is even anti-Christian thinking, if I could call it that, that I was hearing at this meeting. And COVID came up, and people were saying, no, no Boer must take the COVID vaccine. And as for me, I've already decided I'm staying far away from that. But again, that'll give you an idea of how they're thinking, and they are also up to date with things that are going on. They are very different. They are looking on the internet, they are thinking, they're coming across all kinds of stuff. They were talking about the national identity of the Boers and forming such an identity. And it was said that our language is very related to the Germans. It's not just Dutch, but that there is a lot of German in our background too. I've heard this before from others as well, and it was mentioned here. Somebody even said that if he listens carefully to Norwegian and Swedish, that he can actually understand some of those words. Another term that came up is the emancipation of the Boer nation, and also teaching Boers about their identity, teaching them about themselves. Something that I'm not going to go into in detail here is actually something that might appear kind of silly to foreigners, in that when foreigners hear the term Boer, they already know that Boer is a nation, is a particular identity, a particular type of person. But inside South Africa, because of language, this is actually not so clear, believe it or not, due to language and what the term Boer means in Afrikaans. It actually causes confusion inside South Africa. Though outside South Africa, people looking on us don't have that confusion. But it's a Afrikaans discussion that I'm not going to go into here. Another thing that came up is trust and keeping certain things confidential, etc. One particularly interesting discussion that also came up is something that I've heard before. I've heard it in many places, and I've heard different people talk about it. I even sat in on a meeting in Canada 2 years ago where people were discussing this exact same thing. Whites were discussing this exact same thing. It's about the law of the sea, and it's about emancipating yourself. It's a whole legal type of debate. Now, I personally don't take the law of the sea seriously, but I've heard lots of whites discuss this in detail, and these are whites in different countries. But what was really interesting was that one man was there with copies of letters that he'd written, and he explained how over the last 3 years he had actually carried out this emancipation thing legally. And he explained some of the benefits that he'd had. And he's got a business, and he said there that his accountant and his tax consultant both told him he's crazy. But he went and he did this, and he had the actual letters right there in front of him that he'd written and signed. And he explained to all of us how he'd emancipated himself and the benefits that had come from this and things that had or had not happened as a result of this. And I must tell you, this is the most fascinating thing I've heard. And this guy was dead serious, and he had his letters and documentation right there with him. This in and of itself might be a topic to look at more closely, because afterwards I was even saying to somebody that maybe at some point we need to get copies of the actual letters he wrote. And these are things he wrote to various government agencies, etc., and they've left him alone, okay? His story is quite amazing. I don't want to go into it in too much detail. But when he was starting to talk about these kinds of things, a sentiment that was widely expressed, that suddenly animated people in a big way, that animated the participants of the meeting was what you could call a tax rebellion, where people are saying, we're paying taxes and we're not seeing anything for it, and our tax money is just disappearing, etc., etc. There was a definite, strong sense of annoyance and irritation at paying taxes to a government that just wastes it and does with it what it wants, and you, the taxpayer, have nothing to show for these taxes that you're paying this ungrateful government for. You could say that there is a sense of financial rebellion, and it's a strong sentiment. And I totally agree with this, make no mistake. Then there was something else that I had heard of by way of my website. An Afrikaans guy on my website had contacted me, and he told me that there's a document about the emancipation of the Boers. And I'd said to him, look, I'm busy. I'm not going to waste my time on this. But in this meeting, they actually discussed who the author was of this document and that it is very real and an excellent thing, actually. And so this suddenly made me realize that something more important had been going on that I'd not realized. And so this document about the emancipation of the Boers is something that we need to take a closer look at. And I need to get a copy of it. It is actually a serious thing that somebody who's a good guy on our side has actually written. One of the speakers made an interesting point. He said that we whites spend far too much time concerning ourselves with our personal safety, that all of our thinking and all of our organizations just focus on our safety due to crime, due to farm murders, due to black attacks on us, etc. And he said we actually need to move beyond that. We must move beyond just focusing on personal safety. We need to start looking at other ways of approaching things. There was also a discussion about taking your property, your personal property that you own, and actually registering it as part of a Boer state. There are many various ideas that were discussed in detail, but this is one of them. That you literally start creating a Boer state by taking the property that you own, and already we have some kind of organization or register, and we start gathering these things together. It was also mentioned that the government punishes us one by one, that the government punishes individuals, and that this has a negative effect on us as a whole. And somebody made the point that we are basically slaves. There was also mentioned that money had been stolen from the Boers in the past, and there was something that was discussed about safety and security, where somebody came up with a really, really brilliant idea. But I'm not going to discuss any of what was said in this regard. I'll just tell you that somebody came up with a really brilliant idea about how we can improve our security. This part of the meeting where they were getting into the details of a state and working together, starting to have some kind of structure, etc., I found this part of the meeting to be absolutely fascinating. One gentleman actually spoke about the concept of having our own court, our own legal system, a people's court, if you will. And then he said that maybe what we need is a police force of our own. Again, something I'd never heard of before. I'd never even thought of these things. But the notion of us having our own court system, our own legal system, and even our own police system, absolutely new ideas and I'm fascinated by it, and I totally support it. I think these ideas are awesome. It was also mentioned that in some respects, the way this country has been set up, that we're getting to the 30-year mark, that we've had 30 years of this new government, and that the honeymoon is over, and maybe the time for divorce is coming. There were discussions where people mentioned all the parallels with Zimbabwe, and also it was stated that the courts can be politicized in Africa, and also that the government can even ignore the court. So this is where the discussion led to the notion that what we need is a Boer system to defend our own. We need our own system to defend our own people. So other things that were mentioned was the need for our own territory and our own sort of financial system. And then somebody brought up the issue of the British and saying that we should actually take Britain to court and charge them reparations for the killing of about 50,000 men, women and children, and that of these, 36,000 were women and children. So I like the idea of reparations from Britain. They were talking about going to the United Nations and requesting these things, but we know that nobody will actually rule in our favor. We know that. But in our discussions also, the points were made, and I also added my voice to this, that one needs to go through processes. You need to do things. You need to do things on paper and go through processes, even if you have to go to the United Nations, even if you know that they're just going to spit in your face and throw it back at you and tell you that the answer is no. You need to go through these processes in order to show that you have followed the processes, that you have followed the legal path, that you have followed all the things that you are required to do, and that people now just chuck it back in your face and tell you, no, you can't have that. It's very important to do that, because much later, having that proof that you have followed that path becomes very important. They were talking that money and finance is a problem, and then it was mentioned that maybe we should tax our own businesses, tax businesses owned by Boers in order to finance a Boer organization or a Boer state, that a Boer state should somehow tax Boers who do own businesses. Again, a great idea. And there were a lot of discussions around tax again. And again, it was said that the guy who doesn't pay tax at all, he's the person who gets the biggest benefit out of tax. In other words, the people that the government hands out all kinds of social freebies to by the billions of rands, these are the people who get the greatest benefit. I also mentioned at the meeting that the total value of the mineral wealth in South Africa, most of which is in the former Boer republics, that the total value of that in the ground even now is over 50 trillion US dollars. It's over 50 trillion US dollars. Another topic that was mentioned with regard to farm murders also came up. Discussion also came up about the government or the ruling party actually secretly being behind the farm murders. Somebody mentioned that they had done actual investigations, that actually gone to actual camps where farm murderers were being trained, etc. And it was also mentioned that some years ago, this I think happened in the time of President Mbeki, that at the time, the government also dissolved the commando system. The commando system used to be the system of white men, mostly farmers, who could function in support of each other. And it was mentioned that 200,000 of them were disarmed, and that they'd even had military rifles at the time, and they were able to defend themselves against farm attackers and function as groups, and the government came and disarmed them. I recall at the time President Mbeki lying, because when he said no, they must disband all the commandos in the country, then he said, no, the police will take care of everything. They'll take care of everything. They'll deal with farm murders, etc. And of course he was lying, because the reality is the police really don't care. It was mentioned that whites are becoming more impoverished as time goes by. As a general note, South Africa as a whole is becoming poorer, but the specific topic was the impoverishment of whites. Then there was a very fascinating discussion also about whites helping whites. And quite a bunch of people were able to give their input on their own experiences in trying to help the poor. And the problems that came out of that, and that it's not an easy thing to do, that they help some of the poor whites, and then those whites actually go on to steal, etc. Very fascinating discussion, and lots of practical stuff that people had done, that people had experimented with. Yet nobody is negative towards the poor. They still recognize that somehow we've got to fix them, we've got to help them. And I totally agree. And then another fascinating point that came up was that the people who are actually the whites, who are actually risking their lives the most to help others, including rich farmers that are attacked, that the people who actually risk their lives the most are the middle class and the lower class of whites. These are the people who risk their lives the most for other whites. They physically go where there is danger, and they have a real chance of being injured or killed. There was a lot of discussion around this, and there was also a plan that somebody had come up with for a insurance policy, a special insurance policy to help people who risk their lives like this. This was something that somebody had already done some work on, and they already had something that people could actually tap into. Then there was a very interesting gentleman who lives in one of the smaller towns in the rural areas, and he spoke about how, due to the latest rounds of violence, that Julius Malema's EFF have been causing mayhem in all kinds of rural towns. But he pointed out that in his town where he lives, that the EFF did not break a single window, did not use a single petrol bomb. Then he explained what he did in his town. He explained how they went about it and what they did and how it was that this violent communist organization, the EFF, did not touch or break even a single window in the whole town. And I'm not going to mention in here what he described of what they did and how they did it. But it was very good to see somebody had been trying a plan, and their plan worked. It was also mentioned that there are 800,000 whites in squatter camps nationwide. And it was mentioned that poor whites, but poor whites who are not in squatter camps, actually do a lot of good work. And we need to actually have a network for these kinds of people, because there's a lot of good that can come out of it. But the whites who are in the squatter camps, they are the ones who are totally broken. They are totally broken mentally and spiritually, and efforts to try and rehabilitate them don't really work, and they are the true problem people. They've been totally broken down. So again, the point was made that we can't move forward without A, money, and B, protection for our people. But it was emphasized that we are doing security procedures or carrying out security procedures when in fact we're under military attack. That the crimes and things that are occurring against us, this is not normal crime. Especially in the case of farms and farmers. This is not normal crime. So we are treating things as normal crime when in fact it's a military attack. These people are trained and armed with military weapons. And it was said that as far as some people were concerned, they regard the ruling party, the ANC, as being behind 60% to 80% of all farm attacks. And it was said that you can't be safe if you aren't free. So the point was made that you need freedom first in order to become safe. You mustn't focus on safety, you need to focus on freedom. That is the essence of the discussion. It was also said that lots of whites are being killed in the cities. And then again, there was a discussion about certain people who are, let's call it, Afrikaans leaders. I'm not going to mention names. And they were saying, well, you get these Afrikaans leaders, they do absolutely nothing, and that this guy lives in a house that's worth 12 million rand. So he's loaded, and life is good for him, and he's doing absolutely nothing for the rest of us. Another point that was mentioned was with these blacks who are invading farms and invading land and then settling there. According to South African law, this is a sneaky thing that the government instituted quite a number of years ago. If somebody pitches up on your property and they come and they squat on your property and they stay on your property for more than 24 hours, I think it is. All of a sudden, the law turns around and the law says, you now cannot kick him off your property and you've got to start supplying him with things like water and various facilities. So this law was created to basically allow blacks to just pitch up on anybody's farm or plot or piece of land and suddenly squat there. And then if you don't evict them quickly, then suddenly you become responsible for them and they're allowed to stay on your property. Now that's a nightmare. And this is a serious issue. This has been going on for a long, long time. So what was discussed was the fact that what we need are anti-land invasion teams. We need teams of such people. So that if blacks suddenly start parking off on someone's territory, that you got to move fast and get them off that territory before they have been there for the 28 or 48 hours, because otherwise that person is then stuck with them for almost ever. To then get them off the land becomes a nightmare for the owner. There was somebody who has a business who said that what he did in his business in order to help whites was that he fired all the blacks who worked for him. And then he tried to hire only whites. But he said that he really battled with the whites. And in the end, the only way to get these whites to really function efficiently for him was that he had to be very disciplined. But he did it and he went through the pain. And he had replaced his black workers with white workers. So again, the meeting had lots of people there who had done things and had practical experience in trying to uplift their own. They have walked the walk. And this guy who had a factory, he said that in attempting to replace his black workers with white workers, he'd had to hire and fire many whites until eventually he could find those who were willing to stay and who he could use. He said that in total he had given 400 whites an opportunity and eventually only kept 40 of them. But again, these are important things, and it's excellent that there are people who've taken their own time and money and they've actually made the effort. It's actually fantastic. And I really enjoyed this part of the discussion as well, where different people were talking about the various attempts they'd made at uplifting and fixing whites, trying to bring in whites, etc., so that they could earn a living. It was actually a very awesome part of the discussion. The one man with his factory who'd gone through this process, he said that a key thing that he discovered was personal motivation, that the people who are most likely to succeed if you try to help them are those who have a personal drive. He says you cannot force people to do certain things. They must have some kind of drive within them, and that those people who have a drive, they are the ones who ultimately are the ones that you can use and rely on. So he said that he'd had a 10% success rate with whites. He then said that there are whites who can't be saved, and he referred to the American term of trailer trash. He said there are some you just cannot save. There was also a discussion about secession. Among the things that were toyed with are the methods by which freedom can be attained. How do you actually attain freedom for your state? And they did discuss secession. And then it was pointed out that there's a guy called Hein Marx, and he's trying to create a country through secession, but his efforts are multiracial. I am well aware of what Hein Marx is doing, and this is true. They were saying that he's also trying to create a bank, but that he's had no luck in that venture. But the problem with Hein Marx is that he's doing a multiracial secession, which I also think is a total waste of time, that we must do something that's whites only. They were also talking about the whites-only town of Orania, and that Orania had also tried to set up a bank, and that they actually have got a thing called Orania Kas, K-A-S, and that Orania Kas is a bank. They've actually gone through the whole process. However, they can't get a license. So they've done absolutely everything to set up a bank, but the bank is not being given a license by the government or whoever it is who dispenses the licenses. I assume it must be some government department. So these are important discussions, these things that I really like. These people are serious. They're talking about the structures that you need in order to be able to create your own state, in order to run your own community. Very important stuff. I really like this. Some other comments about things that I heard. Again, it was just amazing to hear these people criticizing Christianity. I heard an old Boer talking about the Christian notion that you must hate your parents and love your enemies, that it's just total nonsense. How can people take that kind of stuff seriously? Yet that kind of stuff is sitting in the Bible. Then it was also mentioned that any prophets of modern times are liars and they don't take it seriously. There was a mention that Hitler had a 25-point plan. This is true. In about 1920, in the early days of the Nazi Party, Hitler had a 25-point plan. They were saying we can use his plan. There's a lot of stuff in there that's useful. They were also talking about a currency for the Boers. And regarding the destruction of the Boer republics and what they lost, somebody mentioned that it is worth £100 trillion. And that could easily go into our bank, which I like. Our bank could do with some reparations from Britain. People were, of course, wise to the fact that banks create money out of thin air, that we are dealing with a fiat currency, but they insisted that we need a bank of our own. But we don't want it to run with interest. And there was also mention that maybe we should have our own crypto coin. With regard to having our own crypto coin, that is actually quite easy. I know somebody who's done that. And returning to Oranje Kas, the bank that Oranje tried to create, they said that the reason that Oranje Kas can't get a banking license is because the law requires that you've got to have black ownership and black shares in such a company. This is known as BEE, which stands for Black Economic Empowerment. Trust me, that name is totally and utterly not correct in how it describes it. BEE is not about empowering blacks. It's actually a method of allowing specific blacks, it's not for all blacks, it's to allow specific blacks to come and get shares in your company. And it allows them to become wealthy by sucking onto and latching onto your company. So the real problem with Oranje Kas is that because it doesn't have BEE compliance, because blacks don't have a majority ownership or a share in this bank, that therefore the license cannot be issued to it. So these are among the rules in South Africa that basically prevent whites from getting off the ground. So you go and you do everything and then you discover you want to create a company, but you discover, well, you can't get a license because you haven't given blacks a big chunk of your company which you've created and which you've put money into. You've got to give them free ownership of part of your company before you can get a license. So you should realize that the whole thing is so rigged that whites can't even get off the ground even if they follow the law, follow the procedures. It was also mentioned that any bank that we have must not be part of the Jewish system, and no Jews should be allowed in our financial system. In some of the general discussion that followed, they mentioned a very interesting fellow, whose name I'm not going to mention here, but a fellow who's got a very high profile in all white things these days, and he runs a very powerful organization. And they were saying that this guy actually used to be the private secretary of F.W. de Klerk. F.W. de Klerk was the last white president of South Africa. He is somebody who we spit on, we have contempt for. He's the stupid bastard who just handed over the country on a plate to our enemies and shafted all of us. And it turns out that this guy who runs this very powerful organization that does a lot of stuff for whites, that this guy who's the head of it actually used to be F.W. de Klerk's private secretary. So that immediately is a big negative for that guy. That's a name that's well known in Afrikaans circles, and I myself was unaware that this was his previous position. So just to round off, they were saying that everything that we do must be within the law. The viewpoint was that the current government is heading for collapse, so we must just stay within the law and just do our thing. The government is going to collapse. And as we can see around the country is going through various stages of collapse. My own viewpoint is that we are very much in the same phase as Germany in the 1920s when it was the Weimar Republic. In that time, Germany was under Jewish liberalism, Jewish capitalism, and Germany went through all kinds of continual collapses, changes of government, economic collapse, and then they'd try and fix it, and then it would collapse again, and then they'd try and fix it, and it would collapse again. And so it went on and on and on until Hitler came. And my own view is that we in South Africa are in that kind of situation, in that the electricity is collapsing, this thing's collapsing, that thing's collapsing. Just today I heard that in Johannesburg, the municipality cannot fix potholes because they've run out of tar, so no ability to move forward on that. This kind of stuff is going to accelerate, and this puts us very much in that sort of Germany, Weimar Republic kind of phase. So this idea that we must do our own thing and prepare our own stuff, but do it within the law, because the government, and not just government, but government services and all related things are collapsing more and more. Legal stuff, police stuff, hospitals, all kinds of things are collapsing, and even when they are rescued, they will collapse again within a short time. This is definitely the path that we're on, and it's good for us to start looking out for ourselves. There was a lot of discussion about secession on the one hand versus emancipation on the other hand. But I think most people agreed actually that emancipation is the more important principle of the two. And so that's just a roundup of the first day and just various notes and observations of mine of what I picked up on the first day. I just want to correct another error that I made that people told me about after they'd listened to this recording. The other error has to do with mention of the bank called Oranje Kas. And I was under the impression that this bank, Oranje Kas, had been created by the people in the town of Oranje, and that's not correct. It's a separate concept that somebody else came up with. So Oranje Kas has got nothing to do with the town of Oranje. It's a separate concept. And as discussed, they couldn't get a license to trade and function as a valid bank. So that's a roundup of everything that took place at that meeting. And it was an interesting meeting with some interesting topics, some of which I still want to return to. So I hope that we're going to see a revival of the Boers. That's not a name that we've heard used in South Africa in a long, long time. The Boers might be coming back. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.